I'm going to give you good folks of Wetherill Springs a chance to do something that you can tell your children and your children's children about. How you patted one of the most terrifying animals ever to stalk the earth.
Ryan straightened up, moving a couple of steps away from the barred wag.
Is she really taking the lions in among them, Julie?
No, just Raja. That old softy's harmless, unless you get on the wrong side of him.
Katie and Nell had gone forward, each of them taking one of the lions with them, snapping thin chain leashes onto the leather collars. They led them back to stand by Ryan and JB, both of whom moved a few self-conscious steps away. Ellie clipped a similar chain onto Raja's collar, patting the huge head. The tiger opened its mouth. Its half-hearted roar was loud enough to send the crowd swaying back, moving together in the gestalt unison of fear, like a school of fish that scented a killer whale. A fat little man in a striped apron broke the spell by taking the crucial step in the front. He reached out with his hand, a gold ring gleaming in the midday sun, and touched Raja cautiously on the top of his roughed head.
Well done! Mistress Satana rewards you with a kiss.
She offered her pursed lips to him, but his supply of courage had been drained, and he shook his head shyly.
No thanks. I don't think the wife would like that.
Ellie smiled understandingly.
You did good anyway. Who else wants to stroke striped death?
This time there were plenty of volunteers, including three or four of the little children, though all of them were only allowed to pat Raja while their mothers or fathers tightly gripped their other hand. The woman and the animal were working their way slowly around the perimeter of the orchard, nearing the hard core of the buffalo hunters, the scarred giant at its center. Exhaling a cloud of noisome smoke from his cigar, the man dropped his head and said something to his immediate group of cronies, something that made most of them snigger. Ryan had that familiar prickling feeling at his nape, the feeling that something bad was about to go down. Beside him, JB was starting to unsling his Uzi. Neither man spoke to the other. There wasn't any need. Now Ellie was only 10 feet from the hunters. 6 feet, then four.
I want to pet the fucking pussycat! Can I do that?
Sure. Be careful with that cigar. Roger doesn't much like smoke.
Then I'll fucking stub it out, slut!
Before anyone could move, the buffalo hunter leaned forward and stooped a little. He lifted Raja's plumed tail with his left hand and jammed the glowing end of his cigar against the animal's tender flesh.
Ah! I'd be the first to admit to being surprised by this, Abe.
Blood for blood!
Abe started to wonder whether he was becoming seriously sick. The rot-gut liquor burned a hole through his intestines. Twice in the past hour or so, they'd been forced to stop while he hastily dropped his pants by the side of the trail, feeling his stomach contract with the gripping pains. Now he couldn't decide whether he was feeling too hot or too cold. And all the trader could say was that he was fucking surprised that the posse from the nameless shithole of a ville hadn't given up the chase after the brutal murder of one of their number. Well over half of the day had gone, and if anything, the sound of the tracking hounds was closer. They had gone up another steep track after the river crossing. Despite the patches of sunshine between the trees, Abe's clothes didn't seem to have dried properly and still felt damp and clammy. The longer the day wore on and the nearer the vigilantes came to them, the worse trader's temper became. Now he was gnawing at one of their last strips of jerky, the armalite lying across his lap. Abe was stretched out on the dry turf, massaging his belly, trying to get some relief from the raking claws that were working inside his guts.
Oh, how long to dark, trader?
Your eyes failing you, Abe?
Nah, but the sun's gone behind some cloud. I figure the dusk will be in about 3 hours.
Trader didn't even reply.
We got any water left?
Yeah, but you don't get any. Looks like we'll be going down again after we top this ridge. Could be more streams or rivers down yonder. You can drink then.
All of the pine trees vanished once they were over the far side of the hill, replaced by shrunken bushes and outcrops of bare, ferrous rock. The sides of the gorge were the steepest that they'd come across since fleeing the squalid settlement. The path almost disappeared, with tumbled boulders and shale blocking it in several places. There were blotches of sickly green lichen dappling the stones and the long dead trunks of trees, blighted about a century earlier. Ryan wished that they'd had rad counters like Ryan Cotter and J.B. Dix carried, so that they could watch out that they didn't get trapped in any potential hotspots.
You sure we can get out of here, Trader?
Why?
Steep.
And?
River looks much wider.
So what?
Abe was concentrating on trying to hear what Trader was saying, and he slipped and nearly went cascading down to the bottom of the path.
So I don't see any sign of a trail going up the other side of the canyon.
There's bound to be a way out.
There's a hut of some sort down there.
Abe pointed to the roof of a small building that had just come into view, a little way above the cresting whitewater. On the ground alongside the cabin was a large, rubberized, inflatable raft.
We take that boat and run the rapids.
Great.
Swimming had never been one of Abe's favorite activities, and the thought of going down the dark-shadowed gorge wasn't that appealing. It also worried him, as it had earlier, that they wouldn't hear above the rumbling of the frothing water the dogs or the men trailing them. They could be cold-cocked and not even know it, not until they found themselves on their backs, looking up at the sky through fading eyes. As they emerged from the bottom of the path, about 50 yards from the hut, Abe wondered if it had started to rain, but he realized that there was just a fine drizzle spraying from the river as it pounded over the boulders. Trader paused a moment, glancing behind them at the flank of the ravine, checking for any sign of pursuit.
Seems good to me. Let's go boating, Chess. I mean, Abe.
Smoke coming from the chimney of the hut.
Yeah, I see it. Get your blaster out. We'll try words first, then bullets if we need them.
Abe eased the Colt Python in its holster, sighing at the prospect of more killing. During the time that he traveled with Ryan and the others, there'd been plenty of death, but it had somehow seemed unavoidable, whereas with Trader, it seemed to be first choice. Trader grabbed at Abe and pressed his mouth to his ear.
Play your cards lucky, and we can get that raft into the river and be away before anyone sees us.
At that moment, the door swung open, and a man stepped out, holding a long-barreled musket, staring straight at them. They were less than 30 yards away from him.
Single shot. Means you can only chill one of us. The other will get him.
Abe spotted the torn curtain across the square window of the hut twitch as though someone were peering out.
I think there's at least one more inside.
Damn.
The man with the musket had a long beard, flecked with white. His blue shirt had been crudely patched around the collar and cuffs with some flowered pink material.
Help you, Outlanders?
The muzzle of the musket was steady in their direction. The little window creaked partly open, and the barrel of another blaster poked through, instantly confirming Abe's suspicion.
Hire your boat to go downriver a spell?
The Armalite swung loose in Trader's right hand, pointedly not threatening anyone.
Nope, not for hire.
I'll take out the one hiding in the building behind the curtain. You get the one with the musket.
He could waste one of us first.
You chicken shit little bastard. I'm opening fire on the count of three, and if you don't back me, then we both likely get chilled.
Hey, what are you whispering about, mister?
One.
Shit.
Abe wished that his hand wasn't so wet and slippery.
We got trouble, Carl!
Two and three.
Abe had been right to worry. As he snatched the Colt Python from the damp leather of his holster, it slipped through his fingers, clattering on the stones by his feet. He started to stoop to grab at it, wincing at the uncertainty of a ball through his skull. As his hand finally found the reassuring weight of his gun, Abe glanced up, seeing the man with the musket seemingly frozen, shocked into indecision, torn between the eruption of lead from the Armalite and the sight of the small man with the limp mustache dropping a big hand blaster in the dirt. Before he could make up his mind, and before Abe could squeeze the trigger, Trader drove him twice through the middle of his chest.
He who hesitates is lost.
Abe had once heard Doc Tanner say that.
Hey, I like that. Wish I'd said that, Abe. I do.
You probably will, Trader. Shouldn't we see to whoever's inside the cabin?
Got him. No way he can take three rounds from this and carry on.
Trader patted the Armalite. The man with the musket lay still on his back, arms spread, eyes wide open, a dark stain at the crotch of his pants, leaking into the dirt. Trader stalked past him and into the hut. Abe looked behind them, wondering if he'd spotted a flicker of movement high on the ridge.
Yeah, smacked him through the mouth and throat. There's some food in here.